Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us. We're here for another great hour of old-time radio. Hope you enjoy it. This program was on radio as well as on TV, and it starred Vincent Price on the radio side with The Saint. This is a 1950 episode called The Music Murder. And in 30 minutes from now, you'll hear Duffy's Tavern with guest Mickey Rooney. That's going to be from 1949. Now, The Saint.
Adventures of The Saint, starring Vincent Price. The Saint, based on characters created by Leslie Charteris and known to millions from books, magazines, and motion pictures, the Robin Hood of modern crime now comes to radio, starring Hollywood's brilliant and talented actor, Vincent Price, as The Saint.
A proof that the language of music is a truly universal one, Mr. Templar, is in the people gathered here. They run the gamut from saints to sinners. Would you not agree?
I would indeed, Mr. Opto. Won't you join me?
Oh, what? I accept with pleasure.
Fine.
Then you know me, Mr. Templar.
And if you promise to keep the deep, dark secret, I'll confess that I have bought tickets to Carnegie Hall from time to time. Piano concerts mostly, and those performed by Lawrence Opto primarily.
That is a pleasing compliment, Mr. Templar.
Well, it's understandable how I'd recognize a famous concert pianist like Lawrence Opto.
Thank you.
But the reverse is rather puzzling.
Then if you will keep the deep, dark secret, I shall confess. You were pointed out to me by a newspaper reporter seated at my table.
Which explains half the compliment. But why did you come to my table?
Why did you come here to this nightclub called the Birdcage, Mr. Templar?
Well, I could say because it reminds one of the black hole of Calcutta, but... The real reason was to hear the piano music of Johnny Crawford.
Yes, precisely, as did I.
A Dixieland hepcat receiving recognition from a Carnegie Hall maestro?
Johnny Crawford was once my pupil, Mr. Templar.
Oh,
he had a magnificent technical grasp of classical music, but no artistic soul. He was a great disappointment to me. Nevertheless, I do not wish to see Johnny Crawford dead. That is why I have come to you.
Well, now, that's a rather macabre touch to an otherwise lighthearted evening.
Murder is always macabre, Mr. Templar.
So it's to be death by violence.
It is, and I shall tell you a great deal more about it at my home tomorrow morning, Mr. Templar. 637 Reseda Drive. I'm certain that you will be kind enough to be there.
That's the kind of certainty that causes horse players to go broke, Mr. Opto.
Then let us say I'm playing a long shot. And I'm betting that among the saints and sinners present here... You are numbered among the former.
One question.
Yes?
Could you give me any idea as to why someone should desire to remove the aforesaid Johnny Crawford from the ranks of the living?
Oh, I can do better than that, Mr. Templar. I can give you the name of the person who will be responsible.
Oh, and that person?
A musical composer who has been dead for over 100 years. Ludwig van Beethoven.
Yes?
Well.
Should I say thank you or slap your face?
What do you think?
The slaps have it. What could I do for you?
You must be kidding.
And if you're here to see Mr. Opdahl, you must be Simon Templar.
Guilty. And you?
Mickey Clark, Mr. Opdahl's secretary.
Mickey Clark, well.
Won't you lope in? Mr. Templer?
Oh, thanks. I could hardly refuse such an enthusiastic invitation. Well, well, well. Rachmaninoff Prelude in C-sharp. Is that the maestro playing?
It's not Jimmy Durante.
Oh.
The music room's at the far end of the foyer. Mr. Opdahl's expecting you. Come with me.
Thanks. I'll take advantage.
Oh, no. Those are shots.
Identification acknowledged. Come on, let's go.
What's happened in there?
Just stay behind me and let me find out first.
Mr. Templer.
Yeah. Oh, that was no prelude in C-sharp being played in here, Mickey. It was a prelude to murder.
To murder?
Where do those French doors lead to?
Why, to the terrace. Why?
See if it isn't too late to help Mr. Opdahl while I...
Oh, no!
Well, it's nasty weather out anyway.
But aren't you going after him?
My halo wouldn't look too well on top of a shroud. Where's the nearest telephone?
Telephone?
Yeah, I know this comes as a great surprise, Mickey, but the police are rather fussy about these things.
Oh, yes, of course. The telephone's right up... Opdahl. He's not dead. He's trying to play something.
Take it easy, Mickey. Take it easy. Opdahl, it's Simon Templer. Who shot you? Do you know who shot you?
Can't talk, but he's trying to play.
Opdahl, can you hear me? It's Templer. Who shot you, man? Who shot...
Mr. Templer.
He is, Mickey. This time it's for sure.
Oh. What was he trying to say as he died? Tell us the name of the murderer.
One thing I've learned in this drab, weary life, my dear, is never to second guess a dead man. Hey, what's this? Caught under the music rack.
It looks like a couple of torn bits of paper.
You thereby win your A for a cumin, Mickey.
Oh, I recognize that top one, Mr. Templer. It's a personal notepaper used by Mr. Opdahl.
Who is, Paul?
Paul? Paul DeGage. He's Mr. Opdahl's concert manager. Why?
The name Paul is the only written word left on the page. Look, we might have a slightly better lead on this second bit of parchment.
Why, it's part of a music manuscript.
Yeah, and an old one, too, judging by the condition of the paper and the signature attached thereto. Ludwig van Beethoven.
Beethoven?
Mm-hmm, the popular tunesmith who left this mortal coil some 100 years ago. Do you think it's possible that the old boy came back? You sure you want to come along with me on this little jaunt, Mickey?
Lawrence Opdahl was a swell boss and a wonderful guy. If there's anything I can do to help you get the man who killed him, I'm going to do it.
And all the time I thought it was my personality that intrigued you. Well, let's hope I'm not as disappointed by Mr. Opdahl's concert manager, Paul DeGage.
I still can't believe it, Mr. Templer. Lawrence Opdahl dead. Murdered. Why would anyone want to murder Lawrence Opdahl?
That was going to be my question, Mr. DeGage. You don't suppose it was because he was going to tell me who wanted to murder Johnny Crawford, do you?
Johnny Crawford?
Yeah.
Who is he?
No. You obviously don't suppose. Any other suggestions?
Well, I'm sorry, Mr. Templer, but I'm so stunned by this news. Lawrence was going to play for me this very evening, and
now... I was aware that Mr. Opdahl had a concert date for this evening, Mr. DeGage.
It wasn't a concert engagement, Miss Clark. By a stroke of good fortune, I'd come into possession of an original musical manuscript of Beethoven's, Piano Sonata, and Lawrence was...
Did you say Beethoven?
Yes. It's an original that's never been published. It was known to exist, but was lost and moved to the publishers in 1824, and... It never turned up again until just recently.
Why, it must be worth a fortune, Mr. DeGage.
Well, it is quite valuable, yes. I'm going to offer it for sale to a small group of collectors in Coronado this evening. Lawrence had agreed to play it for me, but
you
now...
wouldn't happen to have this manuscript here, would you?
Well, yes. Yes, it's in my safe.
Do you mind if we take a look at it?
Why, of course not. I'll have it for you in just a moment.
Thanks.
It's a remarkable document. Seems to be no question as to it. Authenticity.
And that always helps. How did you happen to get hold of it?
A refugee from Vienna brought it to this country some years ago. Just discovered it among some old family possessions he'd brought along with him. Doesn't know how it got there. I'm selling it for him.
There you are. Please handle it carefully, Mr. Templer. It's quite old and fragile. It would probably tear quite easily.
That wouldn't be an apology for the fact that it's torn right now, would it?
Torn? Why, I'm not certain I understand.
The missing signature should supply the missing meaning.
Missing signature? You mean that... Oh, good heavens. Well, you really had me worried for a moment, Mr. Templer. But as you can see, this manuscript is in perfect condition. There's the original signature. Ludwig and Beethoven.
He's right, Simon. What about that torn piece?
Exactly what I was going to say, Mickey. Thanks for your trouble, Mr. DeGage. Sorry I bothered you.
It's not a question of bothering me, Mr. Templer. I'm merely puzzled. I don't understand what a Beethoven manuscript might have to do with the murder of Lawrence Upthorpe.
That's the reason I'm sorry I bothered you, Mr. DeGage. Now, neither have I.
Thank heaven the police are gone. I don't think I could have returned here. Mr. Opdahl was told.
I'm not too happy about homicidal surroundings myself, Mickey.
Well, then why come back at all?
I find myself with an ungovernable impulse to indulge in musical composition, and I... More of that later, Mickey. It would appear we have an unexpected eavesdropper amongst us.
An unexpected...
Mm-hmm.
Oh?
Oh, don't stop now, Sam.
If you don't mind, I just assume the farther away I am from lethal weapons, the better I like it.
That is a gun in his hand, isn't it, Simon?
The genus automatic pistol, species caliber 45.
That's very scientific, chum. Well, you better hand over that paper.
Paper?
Don't play coy, chum. The paper you took Mopdahl's music on.
Oh, that. Oh, I'm sorry, but I'm saving autographs. Never had one of Beethoven's before.
Yeah, I bet you never had your tummy blasted by a 45 slug before, either.
True. So I think I'd better take that gun.
No, you don't,
better
chum.
Give it to me.
All right, chum. I will.
Simon! Oh, you killed him.
Shut up.
He's dead. You killed him. You
said to shut up, didn't I? I'll stand back when I look at that paper. She'll be somewhere in his... Yeah. Inside pocket, huh? Thanks, chum.
Pretty brave with a gun, aren't you?
Yeah. Better retire from the music business, sister. From where I sit, it don't look too healthy. So long, baby.
Simon, please answer me. Are you all right, Simon? Answer me, please.
I must speak to my barber about this.
Simon?
Somehow the patting and massage I get after a shave doesn't give me anything like the sensation I'm getting now.
Simon, you're all right. Well,
I will be when the boys operating the trip hammers on my skull knock off at 5:00.
Why didn't you let me know? Why did you lie there playing possum like that?
I doubt that a possum would appreciate the lovely picture you made as you bent over me, but as for me, well, I was in no hurry to wake up. What happened to Chum?
He departed with your prize autograph after creasing your skull with a bullet and threatening me with the same.
A lovable soul, isn't he? Mm. My only consolation is that his aim is far worse than even his intentions.
Simon, for Pete's sake, come across. So far, I don't understand a thing.
Which puts us both in the same boat. And speaking of boats, come along, Mickey. We've got an appointment with one.
Oh, how nice. Any particular kind?
Oh, yeah, a very particular kind. A ferry boat that's going to take us across the Bay to Coronado.
Simon, this ferry boat is like a ghost ship.
Oh, now, don't tell me that a little fog is getting you down, Mickey.
Little fog. It's so thick we can't even see the rail from here. Why are you so insistent on getting over to Coronado tonight?
Paul DeGage is selling a Beethoven manuscript to a bunch of collectors there, remember? One of my more famous hunches tells me that among those present should be a guy for whom capital punishment was invented.
I hope it's better than the two hunches you had on that torn manuscript.
It has to be.
What is it, son?
A piano in the lounge. Do you hear it?
Yes. Rather good.
It should be. The pianist is a former pupil of Lawrence Opdahl's, now holding forth at a dingy dive called the Birdcage.
The Birdcage? Simon! You mean Johnny Crawford?
Well, if it isn't, he should sue for plagiarism. That's his personal theme song.
Johnny Crawford aboard this ferry boat. Now, why would he be going to Coronado?
That's a good question, Mickey. Suppose we ask Johnny for the answer, huh? The door to the lounge should be somewhere over here.
Maybe it is, but it looks like you'll have to navigate by radar to find it.
Somebody's coming out on deck now. All we have to do is find
all right,
that door.
Calm down. Everything's going to be okay.
I hope you're right, Jensen. I've got the creeps for fair.
Never mind the creeps.
I
know I'm right. Just don't get excited. We got the signature, didn't we?
Who's going to know the difference now? I know it, Jensen. Maybe someone else does, too.
Oh, forget it, Johnny, will you? I'll meet you at the birdcage when it's all over.
The birdcage. Johnny Crawford at the birdcage.
What are you kicking about? It's a living, isn't it?
Oh, sure.
Pretty soon we'll all be in a heavy sugar. Now, just you wait.
You better be right on.
They're gone, son. Hidden in the fog. Who were they?
Didn't you recognize one of the voices?
Well,
it was the friendly one who tried to part my hair with a .45.
What was it all about?
That's the second question I have to ask Crawford. You wait here, Mickey. I'll be right back.
Simon, you can't. Jensen's got a gun.
Oh, don't worry about that. I'll keep my fingers crossed. I'll be seeing you.
Simon, I can't stay here alone. I'm allergic to fog. Oh, you crazy fool. I can't even see you.
Oh.
Simon. Simon, what was that? What happened? Simon! Oh, no. Simon! Help!
Run overboard! Run overboard!
Frankly, no, I'm damp, my head aches, I've swallowed liberal quantities of seawater, which I found much too salty, and I have a terrific yen to play the piano.
To play the... Oh, no, not again.
Mickey, my dear, any psychiatrist will warn you of the dangers of inhibiting a creative urge. I think I'd better get into that lounge and get this one out of my system. Children make a grave mistake, Mickey, by not paying attention to music lessons. Now, if I'd only listened to Professor Heinrich Wurzel,
If you'd only listened to me, Jensen or Crawford, whoever it was, wouldn't have hit you on the head. And you'd be rational now, rather than non-compos mentis.
Oh, you shouldn't speak so harshly of whoever it was, Mickey. When he tossed me into the briny, for some reason I thought of music, piano music. And I think I've got something. If I could only find the right combination.
I think you should try to find that psychiatrist you mentioned earlier. More attention to your noodle and less to noodling might result in getting...
Mickey, you've jumped to a big, fat, and incorrect conclusion. Listen to this.
It's hardly what I'd call a musical tour de force.
Mickey, you're not listening. I'll give you one more chance. There. Sound familiar to you?
Not in the least. But then I didn't take lessons from Professor Heinrich Wurzel, which might account for my... Wait a minute. That phrase. Isn't that what Lawrence Uptall played just before he died?
You see, you should have studied under Professor Wurzel. Oh. He would have given you 100 in musical identification.
Now you're not trying to tell me that that little musical phrase means something, Simon.
Now, let's see now. We'll be in Coronado at 6.
Yeah.
That should give me about 2 hours to prove its meaning to you.
Sounds like rather complicated procedure.
Oh, the procedure itself will be simple, but first I have to clutter it up with a call to Lieutenant Flanagan and a little visit to the public library.
I can only say, Simon, that I trust the past hour and a half in that library was more entertaining to you than it was to me.
Oh, it was, Mickey, it was. You'd be surprised at the amount of interesting information one can garner in a library.
Maybe I wouldn't be so surprised if you'd share some of it with me.
Well, I learned the very interesting tidbit that Ludwig van Beethoven lived from 1770 to 1827.
assassin.
Mm-hmm, that he wrote 9 symphonies.
Amazing.
That he had a sketchbook containing a mass in C sharp, a piano sonata, a fugue on Bach, and...
Oh, Simon, please. If that's all you can tell me about an hour and a half of wasted time...
Well,
you can...
not quite. I could mention the fact that one of the more incorrect books on Beethoven was written by a John Masefield Crawford.
Well, what difference does it make? Who wrote the... John Masefield Crawford?
Mm-hmm.
Could that be our Johnny Crawford, by any chance?
Could be.
An authority on Beethoven?
A poor one, but an authority.
So what?
So this. We're going to make a bid on a Beethoven manuscript, and don't be too surprised if we win it. And a murderer as well.
Paul DeGage up on the roster. Looks as though the bidding's about to begin.
You couldn't ask for better timing from a metronome.
All right, gentlemen. Quiet, please. Quiet. This was to be a very happy occasion, gentlemen, as you all know. But we were to present here tonight an original, authentic, and hitherto unknown manuscript of a piano sonata by Beethoven. In honor of the occasion, I prevailed upon my dear friend, Lawrence Hopstall, to be the first to play the sonata. Unfortunately, as most of you now know, he has met with a tragic end. In deference to Lawrence's memory, I have not sought another pianist to substitute for him. I am certain you all share my feelings. And so...
I'd be very happy to play the sonata for you, Mr. DeGage.
Simon, are you crazy?
I'm not certain I quite understand the meaning of this interruption, Mr. Temple.
Oh, I wouldn't let that bother me, Mr. DeGage. Now, as soon as I reach that piano... There.
Well, really, Mr. Templer, I...
Oh, it's quite simple, Mr. DeGage. I'm going to substitute for Lawrence Hopstall.
You? Why, I didn't know that you were a pianist, Mr. Templer.
Oh, sure. One of the best. Listen to this.
Mr. Templer. There can only be 2 explanations for this outrageous action on your part. You're either drunk or mad. I shall have to ask you to leave this hall at once.
Now, surely, Mr. DeGage, you wouldn't want me to leave so soon, not before I've told these gentlemen that Beethoven never wrote the music on that manuscript you have for sale.
Beethoven never wrote
that manuscript is a fake. No such piano sonata was ever written by Beethoven or lost on its way to the publishers.
This is preposterous. The record of that sonata is in Beethoven's own sketchbook.
Oh, I'll admit that a piano sonata is noted in the sketchbook, yes. But if the person who forged this manuscript had looked far enough, he'd have learned that the original was written for 4 hands as a duet, not for 2.
Well, I can't believe it.
This manuscript is a forgery, written by a former so-called expert named Johnny Crawford.
But if this is so, is it... Do you have any proof, Mr. Templer?
Lawrence Opdahl's death is proof enough. He discovered the forgery... But then he made a grave mistake. He thought Crawford's life would be in danger to prevent the knowledge from coming out. But it was his own life that was taken.
Then it was Crawford who killed him?
Opdahl told me who killed him, Mr. DeGage.
Opdahl?
He couldn't talk, but he could play. And he played 6 notes. These notes. Those notes spell the name of the murderer. A name that will be verified by his accomplices when they're picked up by the police. And for the edification of those who never studied under Professor Heinrich Wurzel, the notes...
You never hang this on me, Templar.
Now, Simon, he's got a gun.
Well, then I'd better...
Leave him. I'll kill you for this, Templar. I'll kill you.
Oh, that's such a revolting thought to gain. I'd better not risk the feet. Possibility. Now, what was that you were saying, Mr. DeGage?
Simon, he can't say anything. He's out cold.
Come to think of it, so he is. And look at the time, just 8:00. I told you you'd have your answer in 2 hours, didn't I?
Then the whole idea was DeGage's from the start, and Johnny Crawford and Jensen were working for him.
Mickey, why don't you stop your intellect from taking over for your emotions?
Simon, then Crawford must have forged the manuscript. He was a good enough pianist and a semi-authority on Beethoven to do it. But how did Mr. Opdahl come into it?
You know, they say that boat rides are wonderful therapy in cases of inhibited romance.
Of course. Crawford was his pupil. I'll bet he got cold feet and showed Mr. Opdahl a copy of the manuscript. And Mr. DeGage got wind of it, killed Mr. Opdahl, and made off with the copy. Oh, only part of it was torn off of the music rack.
Oh, this blessed fog. It makes everything so warm and cozy.
But it must have been the idea of a second manuscript that tipped you off, huh? Particularly when Jensen was so anxious to get the torn signature.
I wonder if you'd still feel like slapping my face.
And, of course, I finally got what you meant about those six notes Mr. Updahl played. They were degage, spelling degage.
Yeah. Mickey, when are you going to stop being logical?
Oh, Simon. Right now.
You have been listening to another adventure of The Saint, the Robin Hood of modern crime. And now, here is our star, Vincent Price.
Ladies and gentlemen, one of the four horsemen is still riding across Europe, scarring the bodies and spirits of millions with brutal hooves. His name is Hunger, and his victims are legion. Their cries for help are sounding right outside our door. Despite increased supplies of certain foods and improved crop conditions, Europe's need for more food is urgent and immediate. Americans can help now by sending food packages to Europe's hungry ones through the auspices of CARE, a nonprofit humanitarian organization. CARE, spelled C-A-R-E, stands for Cooperative for American Remittances to Europe. It is composed of the country's 26 top welfare agencies, all operating to drive the specter of hunger from Europe. You can aid in this work by sending a $10 remittance to CARE, New York. A 21.5-pound food package will then be sent to any designated person in 15 countries. Or if you wish, CARE will select a recipient. Smaller food packages are available for lesser amounts. The address again is CARE, New York. Remember, they still need care. This is Vincent Price inviting you to join us again next week at this same time for another exciting adventure of The Saint. Good night.
Tonight's script of The Saint was written by Sidney Marshall. Our cast included Alice Frost, Fritz Feld, Ted Osborne, Tony Barrett, and George Neese. The music was composed and conducted by Von Dexter. The Saint, based on characters created by Leslie Charteris, is a James L. Safier production and is directed by Helen Mack. Vincent Price is soon to be seen in the Universal International picture Curtain Call at Cactus Creek. All you Saint fans will be glad to know that the Saint comic books are on sale at all newsstands. Your announcer, Doug Gourlay. Monday night brings you two great adventure mystery programs side by side on most NBC stations. You'll hear Nightbeat and then Top Secret. Lovely Alona Massey stars in Top Secret, the story of espionage during the last war. Be sure to tune here tomorrow night for Nightbeat and Top Secret. Next, Sam Spade, then Summer Symphony on NBC.
Touché, the hand lotion with a beforehand extra, and Vitalis for well-groomed hair, bring you Duffy's Tavern with our guest tonight, Mickey Rooney, and starring Archie himself, Ed Gardner. Here's the proven way to keep your hair well groomed. The way successful men in both sports and business keep their hair looking its very best. It's Vitalis and the 60-second workout. See how the Vitalis workout helps your hair, helps stimulate your scalp. See how it prevents dryness, routs loose dandruff, and helps check excessive falling hair. And see how Vitalis keeps your hair handsome and healthy looking with never a trace of a greasy patent leather shine. For there's not a single drop of mineral oil in Vitalis. So try Vitalis and the 60-second workout. You'll like it, and you'll like what it does for the looks of your hair.
Hello, Duffy's Tavern. Where do you leave meat to eat? Archie the manager speaking. Duffy ain't here. Oh, hello, Duffy. Mickey Rooney. Yeah, that's the guy. Short, freckled, blonde hair, pug nose. Sort of a Van Johnson at half mast. Yeah, a little bit of a guy. And in fact, they tell me when two grasshoppers meet, one says to the other, I ain't seen you since you was knee-high to Mickey Rooney. Yes, and his size is a bit of a problem, too, you know, especially in Hollywood. Well, you know, he's too short to be a lover and too tall to be a producer. He's coming down to the tavern tonight to star in a new television show I'm writing. Television, Duffy, you know, TV, or, as they call it in the trade, voodoo. Huh? Well, Duffy, let me put it this way. You know the saying, vaudeville is dead? Well, television is where you watch the funeral. Yeah. Well, I think, Duffy, I think Rooney should be great for television. Well, sure, you know, they got them little 7-inch screens. He's a natural. Well, look, Duffy, I'm busy now. I'll call you back.
Hey, Archie, what's this about you writing a television program?
That's right, Miss Duffy. I'm going to get into television while it's still in its infancy.
What are you trying to do, stunt its growth? Besides, what do you know about writing television?
What's to know? I wrote radio plays. Television is exactly the same, except you dub in the faces.
Well, if you take my advice, you'll forget television and stay right here where you got a steady job and the security of $15 every week.
You call that security, Miss Duffy? I've had me back to the wall so long, the handwriting is on me. Now, look, Miss Duffy,
Oh,
hey, did you hear them?
Hey, did you hear that?
There's no reason you shouldn't hear it twice. You read two newspapers, don't you?
Eddie, may I repeat?
Yeah,
go ahead. Hear the news? Archie's writing for television.
Ain't I having enough trouble with
it? Look, don't let television off, Eddie. It's a big thing. In fact, I often wonder how people ever got along without it.
I don't know. Just lucky, I guess.
Eddie, from the tone of your inference, I gather you don't like television.
Oh, it's all right while you're sitting at a bar watching it. Just that I don't like the after effects.
You mean the eye strain?
No, the hangover.
Yeah, you're right, Eddie. Personally, I'll still take radio.
Radio? Miss Duffy, I see you're still living in the Middle Evil Ages. Why don't you get up to date and realize that the future always progresses the past? We've got to advance. The television is to radio what the caliper is to the old-fashioned slide rule.
What does that mean?
With a thought that deep, one does not stop to analyze.
Well, tell me, deep one. Who's going to act in this show of yours?
Only Mickey Rooney.
Mickey Rooney!
Now, look, lay off. I need him for the show, and there ain't enough of them to go around. You're so both put out of here, I'd like to finish the script now. Let's see. Act two. Our hero enters. He's a man of the world. Handsome, dashing, debonair. An amused smile plays about his intelligent face. He speaks. Hello, Finnegan.
What you doing?
I'm writing a play for TV.
That's nice. TV who?
It ain't a who, Finnegan. TV is slang for the idiom. In other words, well, what is it that people go into the living room for every night and turn out the lights and watch for hours?
The dame next door.
talking about a different kind of entertainment, television.
Oh, that. Uncle Louie's got one of them things.
Oh, yeah? You like to watch it?
Well, I can't make up my mind, Arch. I don't get to see much of it, thanks to me sister.
How come?
Well, Uncle Louie's set's got a 7-inch screen, and me sister's got a 12-inch head.
Well, in that case, why don't you sit in front of your sister?
That's where me Uncle Horace sits.
Well, if he's sitting in front of her, how can she see?
Well, she can see. You know Uncle Horace.
Oh, yeah, the one with the hole in his head.
Yeah, yeah. He thinks television is wonderful.
By the way,
what's this television show that you're writing on?
Well, it's sort of a soap opera.
I wish you wouldn't use that word.
Opera?
No, soap. Every time I mention that word around the house, my old man washes me mouth out with dyke.
Well, I'll tell you what. To make your old man happy, I'll change it. I'll write a dirt opera, Finnegan.
Hi, Arch.
Well, Joe Moran. Hey, Joe, you're a radio guy. What do you think of television?
I don't know. I don't drink.
I think I'll send that to Fred Allen. But I asked you a question.
Well, frankly, Arch, I think television is going to kill the motion picture business.
I thought the motion pictures did that themselves.
That's very, very funny. Mind if I send that to Fred Allen?
Where do you think I got it? Well, anyway, when I'm driving that, Joe, you know I'm writing a television show.
Oh? Well, when does it start?
Well, as soon as I find a sponsor.
A sponsor, huh?
Yeah, you know, a censor with money.
Well, any chance of a job in this show, Arch?
Acting?
Yeah.
Could be, but would you mind first giving me an audition?
No, not at all.
I'd like to make sure that you can run the gimlet of emotions. Now, let me see your register, for instance, love. You know, like Charles Boyer. You
do. Okay.
Toujours l'amour, Truchet. Hedy, come with me to the drugstore. I will shower you with Truchet, the creamy, fragrant hand lotion that keeps hands feeling smoother, looking lovelier.
This is the hottest lover since Lanny Ross. Look, Joe, try another one. See what you can do with sorrow.
Okay, get a load of this.
Oh, please, don't take away my bottle of Truchet. What would I do without it? It's different from other hand lotions. Because it has a unique beforehand extra that protects hands from chapping.
Well, how's that for sorrow, Arch?
Pretty sorry performance. Would you like to try for fright?
Okay. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. As long as Truchet is on your hands, before you do dishes or go outdoors, they're guarded against chapping. Water chapping is not as wet as chapping. Well, Arch, how was that for fright?
Frightful.
Well, Arch, you mean my acting leaves something to be desired?
It leaves something, Joe, but it ain't to be desired. Hey, wait a minute. Excuse me, Joe. Eddie, look who just come in, Mickey Rooney.
What?
There, walking in under the swinging doors. Eddie, watch me flatter the guy. Well, Gary Cooper. Well, how are you, tall in the saddle?
Wait a minute, just a minute, Arch. I'm Mickey Rooney.
Mickey Rooney. That's... Well, how time flies upwards. Tell me, Mick, what's new with you?
I don't know. I haven't read the gossip columns today.
Gotta send that to Fred Allen. Well, Mick, it certainly is good to have you down here to the tavern. Tell me, how come you never visited us before?
Well, up to now, Arch, my studio has been very strict with me.
Yeah, huh? What do you mean?
Well, my contract says I can't bail out of a plane, jump into a volcano, or go over Niagara Falls in a barrel, or be seen in Duffy's Tavern.
Think I'll send that one to Milton Berle. Tell me, Mickey, speaking of television, as we do in circles, is it true that, true what they say in Hollywood?
What's that?
That the movie business is falling apart?
Arch, if things get any worse, the studios are going to produce the popcorn and hand out the pictures in the lobby, that's what. Yeah,
things are pretty desperate out there in Hollywood, huh?
Desperate? Do you want to know a secret?
What?
Do you know what they're planning to do?
What?
Turn out good pictures.
No. Mick, they wouldn't dare.
It's the last resort.
Well, I guess it's what they say is true. There's no business in show business. But you're a trooper, Mick. You ain't got nothing to worry about. Incidentally, how did you ever start in show business anyhow?
Well, that goes back a long time, Arch. You see, when I was a baby, Mom and Dad wanted to find out what I was best suited for.
Uh-huh.
So right after I was born, they had the nurse give me a test.
Test, huh?
Yeah. On one side of me, she put a doctor's satchel, and on the other side, a lawyer's briefcase.
Why did you reach for?
The nurse.
So, they decided to make you an actor then, huh?
Yeah, that's right. I went into vaudeville with my mom and dad.
Yeah, huh? How old was you then?
2 years old.
2 years, huh? What'd you do before that?
Well, Arch, to tell the truth, I just loafed a little bit. But those were the days, good old vaudeville, the Chinese jugglers, the tightrope walkers, Weber and Fields.
Yeah, Gallagher and Sheen, Hammacher and Schlemmer. I used to love them, Max. You know, I often wonder whatever happened to them corny old vaudeville jokes.
You really want to know?
Yeah.
I sent them to Fred Allen.
Sorry, Arch, I was either... Well, Edward G. Robinson.
And again, it's Mickey Rooney.
Arch, it's Edward G. Robinson.
I'm telling you, it's Mickey Rooney.
Okay, we'll ask him. Hey, bud, who are you?
Never mind who I am, see? I'm the fellow that asks the questions around here, see? This is my territory, see? Ah! Ah!
You're right, Arch, it's Mickey Rooney.
Hey, Mickey, here's an idea. Them dialects of yours, they're perfect for television.
Me, Arch, on television?
Why, certainly. You see, the way I figure it, them television audiences tired of wrestling and hockey. They're crying for something else to get tired of.
Well, tell me, what are you going to give them?
You. Now, how would you like to play the lead in a daytime soap opera?
How would you like a poke in the eye with a sharp stick?
Now, look, don't make no hasty decisions. There's room for good acting in television, you know. It's a medium where if anything is well done, it's rare.
You can send that one back to Pick and Pat, too, kid.
Look, Mick, please, don't be jovial about this. You got your future to think of. You know, you've been around a long time now, and you ain't getting no taller, kid. Now, please, don't pass this up. Don't be a schmo, you know. There's a lot of room in television for tall, handsome, good-looking types like yourself.
Ah, that did it. The schmo must go on.
Well, Mickey, did you read the television script?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. What'd you think of it?
It should happen to Butch Jenkins.
We're saving him for the Hardy family. Look, this, it just looks bad on paper. Where do you hear it? Now, leave us run through it. You see, in the first scene, you play a married man. By the way, you've been married, ain't you?
Arch, pound for pound, I'm the most married guy in Hollywood.
That'll help you handle a part. Now, you're the husband, uh-huh. And Finnegan is your rival.
Finnegan is the rival. I say, well, who finally wins the girl, Arch?
You do, the husband.
Who plays the girl?
You do.
I'll play the rival.
Look, Mitch, in television, they all look like that. Okay, we'll switch it around. You play the rival, Mickey. Now, places, everybody. Mr. Melnick, fanfare, please. Thank you. Okay. Now, Eddie, you exit from the left and read the opening announcement there.
Ladies and gentlemen, to those of you who are watching this television program at home, I say greetings. And to those of you who is watching it in bars, I say order double. You'll need it.
Please, just read what's wrote there, will you?
Now I give you the director of our voodoo playhouse, Mr. Cecil B. DeArchie, our head... the head villain.
Hey, hey, thank you, thank you. Thank you. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the ships at sea. Tonight... Tonight we bring you another episode in the true life story of lovable old John and his pretty young wife, lovable old Mary. A story that asks the question, can two people in love find happiness? As our scene opens, John, a brilliant young banker, unexpectedly returns home from his office to find his wife, Mary, making love to the Iceman. A typical American family. As our story begins, we find lovable old Mary speaking to lovable old John.
What's the idea coming home so early, you jerk?
Good evening, Mary. Mary, don't think me suspicious, but why is that derby hat hanging in the hallway?
I'm taking trombone lessons.
Well, what about them ice tongs on the couch?
Ice tongs? I borrowed them from a neighbor. I lost my eyebrow tweezers.
Mary, would you think me suspicious if I just asked one more question?
What is it?
What are you doing on the Iceman's lap?
John, you mean you put two and two together?
Yeah, and it adds up to... four?
I'm sorry, John, but I've loved him for years. Loved him for years!
You mean all this time you've been cold to me? You've been warming up to the Iceman?
John, let's be civilized about this. Let's not make a scene of it, shan't we?
Mary, it's too late. We gotta have a showdown. Iceman, tell me, do you love Mary? I'm asking you. Speak now or forever hold my wife.
Mickey, that's your cue. Give out with a love scene like Clark Gable.
Oh.
Okay, Finnegan, give him the cue again.
Iceman, do you love my wife?
All right, you ask me. I'm going to tell you, sure, I love your wife. I love her, do you hear? That's the way it is, and that's the way it's going to be, brother.
Why, you cat! Take your cold hands off of her!
John, I'm afraid it's too late.
You mean?
His hands are no longer cold.
You might as well be mad about this, lovable John. I'm taking Mary away with me. Away, do you hear?
Lovable old Mary. Is this true?
Yes, lovable old John. This is the end.
The bitter?
The bitter.
Well, it had to happen to somebody. Good luck to you.
Well, so long, sucker. I hope there's no hard feelings.
Sucker, huh? Little does he know I didn't pay the ice bill.
Thank you. And now that Mary has run away with the Iceman, what will happen to John? Will he find new happiness with the refrigerator? Only time will tell. But first, a word from one of our sponsors.
Folks, as you know, we're celebrating National Eat a Plate of Rutabagas Week. For robust and vigorous health, try Colucci Rutabagas, the rutabaga with the pedigree. One single helping of Colucci Rutabagas contains more iron than the double bed spring. And it's twice as delicious. So remember, if it's iron that your system lacks, fill your stomach with rutabaga and listen to the clink. And above all, remember our sponsor's jingle. A.
Avocado.
B.
Boiled potatoes.
C.
Succotashes.
And D. C. And folks, back to our smell-o-vision.
I'll ignore it. And now back to our story. The scene is 20 years later. Lovable old John has sank lower and lower. He has tried everything to forget. He's drifted from job to job. Western Union boy, song plugger, lighthouse keeper, general in a South American army. But all the time his mind was elsewhere. In desperation, he finally tried the want ads. And that was how John became a doctor. As luck would have it, Mary, in the meantime, had become a nurse. Our next scene is in the hospital. The head of this hospital is the famous Dr. Gillespie, played by Mickey Rooney. That's you.
I thought I was the Iceman.
We're short of actors. As our scene continues, there is a patient waiting on the operating table as Dr. Gillespie speaks.
Oh, see here, Nurse Mary. I want you to prepare this patient for surgery. Looks like it's going to be a very delicate operation.
Then only you can operate, Dr. Gillespie. You, with those skillful, highly trained, sensitive surgeon's hands. Will you do it?
No, hang it all. On my last operation, I seem to have sewed my fingers together. I'll find out, nurse. Is there a doctor in the house? I say, is there a doctor in the house?
I am a doctor.
You are a doctor?
Yes. I am lovable old Dr. John. Nice. Have you got the scalpel?
Yes, doctor.
What does it read?
His temperature's down to 108.
108? That's pretty low. We better put him back in the sun. But first, let me look at the patient. Gee, Hossifats. It can't be.
Who?
My rival, the Iceman.
Yes, there was the Iceman on the operating table. Lovable old Dr. John's hated rival that had took his wife away. What should John do? What would you do? In Dr. John's trembling hand was a scalpel, sharp as a surgeon's knife. One tiny slip of this scalpel, and the operation might be a success. Dr. John moves slowly toward the operating table. He looks down at his helpless victim, his mind racing blindly. Slowly, he raises his scalpel. And then... But first, a word from our sponsor.
If you're sticking on kicking the bucket, see Cavendish, the smiling undertaker. Ask him about his free trial plan. Only 20 easy payments. Folks, here's your chance to drop dead and save money. And remember our slogan, have a Cavendish funeral while you are still young enough to enjoy it. And now back to our television play.
Thank you, Eddie Green. Scalpel poised in midair, Dr. John hesitates as he faces the most momentous decision of his life. He thinks of Mary and the Iceman, and words from the past streak up through his subconsciousness.
I'm taking Mary away with me. Away, do you hear?
Yes, John, and I'm leaving you. Do you hear?
Dr. John, snap out of it.
Huh?
What's the matter, Doctor? Hearing voices?
Yeah, but don't worry. I hear him all the time.
Well, tell me, have you made up your mind, my boy? Will you operate?
Yes. Even though the Iceman is my hated rival, I'll still operate.
Stout fellow.
Doctor?
Yeah?
Shall I burl the instrument?
No, let's just fry him for a change.
Dr. John.
Yes?
Dr. John, we'd better hurry. The patient seems to have trouble with his breathing.
I'll soon put a stop to that. Quick, nurse. Quick, ether.
Ether.
Ah, that cleared me head. Now, give some to the patient. Dr. Gillespie?
Yes.
Sponge.
Sponge.
Cotton.
Cotton.
Scissors.
Scissors.
Ouch.
Sorry.
Bandage.
Bandage.
It's a tense moment. Dr. John begins the operation. First, he sutures the hemostat. Then, his sensitive fingers working swiftly but carefully, he stitches a hole in the epidermis and skewers up the dorsal fin. Finally, Dr. John speaks.
Gentlemen, the patient will walk again.
You mean the operation was a success, my boy?
Yep, but I never seen a worse case of tonsils.
John, you're wonderful.
Well, I did. Wait. That voice. Nurse, take off that mask.
But I'm not wearing a mask.
Mary, it's you!
Men, the quickest way to discover something better is to try it. That's why I want you to try Benex Brushless Shave Cream. Benex is a new wonder shave with a sensational beard softening formula that has brought better shaving to thousands of men.
Benex Brushless leaves your face feeling extra smooth and comfortable.
And Benex doesn't clog your razor or drain either.
But don't take our word for it. Just try Benex yourself. Get a tube at your nearest drug counter.
Or we'll send you a trial tube free. Write your name and address on a postcard and mail to Benex, B-E-N-E-X, Empire State Building, New York 1, New York.
Remember, buy Benex Brushless or try it free by writing Benex, Empire State Building, New York. Hurry, offer limited.
Mickey Rooney will soon be seen in quicksand and appear by arrangement with Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, producers of the Technicolor picture Little Women, starring June Allison, Peter Lawford, Margaret O'Brien.
NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.